Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Leverage Podcast. I'm here with a very special guest, a new friend of mine. His name is Calvin Paul. Calvin is a world traveler, currently living in LA, and I recently met him on a Playboy boat party that we did in the south of France. A bunch of Playboy models from Eastern Europe, some friends, and they were doing photo shoots, and we kind of came along and had a great trip. Lots of fun, lots of crazy stuff went down. So we'll get into that. Calvin, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Bobby. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So a little bit more background on you. I know you've been, you know, I wouldn't say heavily, you can tell me, but you do have a background in dating and pickup, and I know you've been around the community for a long time. I know you also had like a cool, you know, we'll keep it anonymous, but a Facebook group dedicated to that with a lot of followers and interesting conversation that I've been part of as well.
Entertaining for sure.
Definitely. And you're an entrepreneur, you run your own business. So I wanted to have you on the show because you're kind of ideally what most of the guys that listen are kind of striving to accomplish from a lifestyle perspective. So give us your, you know, 5-10 minute story of how you came to be, you know, this awesome world traveler, you know, good with girls, good with business, all around dope dude.
Cool. Yeah. Definitely feel like lifestyle is a keyword that you mentioned that has always been really important to me, and being able to design your own lifestyle and really take what society expects you to do from a traditional standpoint of graduating from school, getting a job, living that life, and really questioning that. And it's interesting because a lot of friends or a lot of people that I run into do have these alternative lifestyles, including my two younger brothers. And I guess I was just raised in a way where I just questioned the norm and went through an entrepreneurial path. And I'm actually the only brother out of the three of us who has had a normal job. And I started in real estate development when I first moved from Canada to California. And in 2009, when shit hit the fan with the real estate economy, I quit my job, started a business, moved to LA, and I was just so hungry to start down the entrepreneurial path that I was like, I'm going to make this happen no matter what, and worked 100 hours a week. My business was selling goods on eBay. And later Amazon. I think at that time, Amazon was just still books mostly and just getting off the ground with other segments. And I hired my first employee, which was so much of a risk or shot in the dark, and say, oh, I've never hired someone, but I took a chance and just leveraged my time and energies to take the business the first year from zero sales to $1 million in sales, just from pure effort and working those 100 hours and just adding supplier after supplier, product after product, building systems, and took off, and now has provided the lifestyle that I have today 10 years later with some new ventures along the way. Just a little background of the start of the business. And just in terms of dating, I guess you could say, you know, I've always been pretty decent with girls throughout my 20s, and at some point through my business ventures, I met the owner of RSD at Burning Man.
Oh, very cool.
And
Owen or
Papa.
Okay, Nick. Yeah.
Yep, Nick. Yep. So he invited me to an event as his guest for free. And I said, sure. You know, I remember back in college with my roommate, he said, oh, look, there's this Toronto company or this Canadian company. I think they were maybe based out of Ottawa that just came to the dating market. I think we had both read Double Your Dating by David D'Angelo, Evan Pagan. And there was this new company called RSD that seemed to be doing really cool stuff. And I didn't think twice about it or look into it. I just remember that off the cuff conversation. And, you know, then years later at Burning Man, I see the owner. So from there, I kind of got involved in the community a little bit. And being a very analytical guy and being a very kind of all or nothing or intense guy when it comes to getting into anything, I kind of put, you know, 2 feet forward into just focusing on creating abundance in my life in that aspect. And I did it for the reason of I wanted to just optimize that area of my life. I wanted to see how far I could take it. And I went through a series of events that led me to gain more and more abundance in that area. And at a certain point, I remember my friend was talking to me and said, "Hey, if you keep on this level, on this trajectory, you're going to be like at Dan Bilzerian type levels." And I was thinking to myself, you know, do I really want that? That would be kind of cool. But
do I want that life? Yeah.
Yeah, that life. But I've just the way I was raised and my own wants and desires, I've actually felt that I've wanted more of a family life. So kind of put the brakes on that life in the past couple years. But in the height of that era for myself, things got pretty crazy and it led to adventures and stories and great times. So I've kind of been through the whole circle of it, from being just, I guess, an average guy to having much abundance and craziness to now coming back and saying, okay, I've had that and now looking for something else, but still welcoming the occasional taste of that lifestyle. And I guess that's how you and I met, little
on
trip.
Yeah.
on the boat, taking me back to the old times. So
gotcha. Yeah. So you're in a transition from basically being a, you know, crazy tons of girls player, you could, lack of a better word, right, to looking for something a little bit more long term.
Yeah. And, you know, player is an interesting word because traditionally it's kind of like someone who's more dishonest or manipulative in that way. And I never was that in the height of that time. I was very, very transparent and honest and just, this is what I am right now. And this is my philosophy. And I think that was respected in that life that I was living, and it led to some interesting times.
Yeah. And I shouldn't abuse the word player because I'm, you know, on the same page as you when it comes to all that stuff as well. But yeah, and just to touch on that briefly, you know, basically being dishonest is just a way to add a lot of drama in your life, and it doesn't work. And it's just so much better to do things the authentic way. And you know, as I saw on the boat, like, you're super awesome, always had in a good mood, fun to be around, value add to the party. And I think everyone would agree we had a great time, and everyone, you know, seemed to mesh pretty well, except for maybe the first
That's
day.
Really.
Some craziness.
Yeah, well, you know, a friend of mine, very much successful in this area too, and his name's Jay Mulv. I guess I don't know if you've heard of him, but we were always talking back in the day, and you know, we discussed, hey, if with a lot of volume of experiences and women and situations, once in a while you're going to get burnt. Once in a while you're going to have a situation where there's a blowout or just drama is going to happen. It kind of comes with the territory of just, you know, volume and experiences. And it's kind of that one percenter that you just have to deal with. So you just accept it. And the same with these crazy situations. Yeah, once in a while there's going to be a, you know, like someone getting too out of hand, and that's fine. Yeah.
Yep.
Just deal with it.
All worked out.
Yep.
So if you could kind of summarize, but if you could tell us what were the three biggest things, or it doesn't have to be three, what were kind of the major things that allowed you to go from, you know, just however you were before, like you said, you weren't bad with girls or anything like that. You know, you're a decent looking guy, you're tall. So that's obviously an advantage. Yeah. Height's a big one. You know, but it's not like you're Brad Pitt or you had, like, you know, women probably swinging from your nuts all the time. So, you know, what were the three biggest changes or some changes you made that you really saw tremendous results?
Definitely. One, I would say, is self-development. Focusing on yourself and your own mental evolution. And I had, I guess, a few experiences that really helped with that. So I'll break down the three most impactful things as experiences.
Okay.
One being, I took a self-development course in Vegas that was really impactful and focused on, how would I describe it? I guess everyone has issues, right? No matter how great of a childhood you had or how amazing a life you've had, everyone has their own internal issues. It's kind of the nature of growing up, and you start as a child in this world, born in complete innocence and no baggage, nothing. And then usually through your teenage years, you just develop something that you, as an adult, as a conscious adult, as a woke adult, you almost have to unlearn. Mm-hmm. So this program I went through, it was kind of looking at yourself in the mirror and not being able to hide from yourself as much as you tried and as much as you wanted to resist that. You could not hide from yourself. And you look at yourself in this raw and naked form, in this vulnerable form, and you then and there deal with any internal issue that you have. So we're getting really deep into kind of mindset and insecurities and just, you know, your own internal voices. Mm-hmm. So through that period, I basically just completely became comfortable with myself, completely felt that any insecurities or issues were just dealt with then and there. And I've always been a lifelong learner of self-development and read tons of books ever since I was maybe 15 or 16. But that was all theory. And in that program, that gave me a chance to kind of put it, break it wide open and make it more real, make it more experiential. So there were a lot of exercises that internalized a lot of lessons from all the knowledge that I've gained, you know, from the ages of maybe, you know, 16 to 30. And that process, when I came out of that, I felt drastically different. And I've noticed that that translated to more clarity with women as well as business, but mostly with dating. And it was just overall one of the peak life experiences that I've had. So,
if you don't mind sharing, what were some of those, or maybe the biggest insecurity that you had to deal with?
I guess for me, it was weird because I felt like I was actually very grateful for the way I grew up. And from one of the stories, or a lot of the stories that I heard in this seminar, or this 3 week long or 3 weekend long program, I felt that I wasn't really living up to my full potential. So the insecurity was more like, I have all this power, I have all this, you know, education and I guess, how do you say it? It was just like a great upbringing and just all this ability, but I wasn't really using it. Hmm. So it was less so insecurity. It was more so
not living up to your potential, your standards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there was an exercise where they kind of grouped you into different categories, and you know, there was like kind of the people that that weren't really confident in themselves, and there was the people that needed to like let loose a little bit more, and then there was the people that were, I guess, leaders in the group but weren't really showing it in a way. And that was the group that I was categorized in. And it was quite the experience. I have to say that when you do some of these things, do some of these exercises where the design is to make you feel as uncomfortable as possible.
Right.
It's really
therapy in a sense, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty amazing.
Do you mind sharing the name of the program?
It was called Choice Center.
Oh, very cool.
And it's specific to Las Vegas, but it's a form of large group awareness training. I don't know if you're familiar with the term.
I mean, I don't know how similar it is to like Landmark Education. which is something I've done. Okay. Yeah.
It's similar to Landmark. From what I've heard from people who've done both Landmark and Choice is much more experiential. Like it's kind of like Landmark on steroids.
Sounds cool. Should have done that.
Yeah.
Although Landmark was awesome, so I can't.
I think they're all awesome. They're all awesome in their own individual ways. So I'm probably not describing it in the best to do it justice, but just, you know, off the top of my head, the way I describe it is just kind of what I got out of it, and everyone gets different things out of it. But my experience was, in its own right, impactful to me. And I guess I do remember one of the breakthroughs that I had after the first weekend was thinking, I've always been a long-term thinker. I've always kind of like lived for my future family. And I realized in a way that I was being a little bit selfish, because if I was living for my future family in a way that I didn't have that family in place, like I didn't have kids, I didn't have a wife, then I was almost living selfishly. And it's like, of course, I realized that I want to have the best for my children and my kin, my future family. But why can't I bring value to the world at the same time and live very outwardly at the same time? And I think if you come from that perspective, then you end up gaining value at the same time.
For sure. And when you did this course, was this before you started your business?
This was after. This was during my business. So I had already had my business established for about 5 years at that point.
Okay. Roughly. So you're already pretty successful, sounds like, from the first year alone. Yeah, and this kind of just took things to the next level for you.
Definitely. So then the second experience would probably be going to Burning Man and trying mushrooms for the first time.
Nice.
And I've heard this from a lot of people who have had success in this area and other areas, is, the use of psychedelics in the right way, for the right purpose, for the right intent, in the right situation, can be incredibly impactful. And for me, that was another peak experience that kind of opened my mind to the experience of life that we're all going through, and the human experience. And what that allowed me to do was really connect deeper with people.
Very cool. And this was the first time you had tried mushrooms?
First time I tried any sort of drug, really, other than weed.
Gotcha.
So, and I was 30 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very late in life relative to how people usually try it. And it was just the right context. And I had been thinking a lot about the universe and existence, like for like a couple months prior to it. And it was fresh off of the weekend at Choice, actually. It was in between, I think, a couple of the weekends. So I was already in a heightened mindset. I was eating super clean for like 2 or 3 months. I was with family. I was with my brother. And it was very, very impactful. And I feel still to this day that I have benefit from that trip, so to speak.
Yeah. What was it on the mushrooms that allowed you to kind of feel this lack of connection from before versus what you experienced, when you were on them?
Okay. So here's the thing. Some people think psychedelics is just seeing pretty colors or hallucinating per se. And I don't know if I agree with that. I feel, at least with my limited experience with mushrooms, and I mean, I tried ayahuasca later, which is along the similar lines. And mm-hmm. I feel, to me, that it quiets down the noise of everything that's going on, or a lot of the distraction, and it helps you notice things that are already there that are very difficult to feel when your mind is being so noisy.
For sure. I've had the same experience. Especially with ketamine.
Okay.
Which is my favorite hallucinogenic drug. It's kind of a cool drug because it's a little bit of both. You kind of get some of the effects that you might get from, ecstasy or cocaine. You get that high, but you also get the the hallucinating psychedelic experience a little bit in a small dose. And I struggle on other psychedelics like mushrooms, LSD, never tried ayahuasca, because I get crazy anxiety and paranoia. But with the only sometimes it's great, sometimes it's just been really bad. Some bad trips, some great trips. But I've experienced, you know, the benefits as well. My mistake is always doing them in social situations where there's girls around. And then, you know, having that annoying, you know, part of my brain that's always focused on sex and women, and have that running while knowing that I can't even function as far as the conversation going, and just feeling like retarded because of that. So, word of advice to anyone who wants to try that, to make sure you're not in an environment where, you know, you might want to not embarrass yourself in front of girls, because even weed,
I could attest to that. I would say, for me, my experience with mushrooms, at least, has always been very introspective, and it's very antisocial. And the best situation for me, and actually the first situation and the one that was the most impactful that I described, was spending most of that time in a hammock with amazing music and light breeze coming in, and just feeling almost weightless because you're in a hammock in a cocoon of your own self. And that was where I was able to really, really hone in on questions that I wanted to answer, and the answers came.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing what you can learn about yourself, you know, when you're having those experiences. I've had some amazing ones as well. especially if you feel like you're in a safe place.
Exactly. So your question was kind of getting into specifics of what it did or how it felt. And I mentioned about how, you know, it quiets down your mind. And specifically, I was asking very deep questions like, why are we here? And what is the universe? And, you know, the answers came to me in a way that was absolutely hilarious, because I felt that, of course, this is the answer. And I was just giggling hysterically that, oh, this is silly. Like, well, how do I not know this? And of course, you know, there's no like kind of real point to life. It's more, the point is to just experience humanity and to experience the wide cadre of emotions that we're going to feel. So we're going to feel the happiness and the joy and the sadness and the anger and the longing and the loneliness and just every aspect of human emotion. And there's nothing wrong with that. And if we think that there's some bigger purpose, you know, it's so hard for our goal-oriented brains to really figure this out, that there is no purpose. It's just to experience life.
Yeah, and the human experience,
The human experience, exactly. And I felt that, you know, it that we're all energy, and at one point in time, we aren't human. We're just some other being or existence that, you know, maybe we don't fully understand, but in this period of time we're experiencing humanity, and we should just kind of run with that, so to speak.
I tend to believe we're all consciousness in some form, right? And I don't know if you've read any Eckhart Tolle.
Power of Now,
The New Earth was really the one that kind of cemented it for me. So if you haven't read that, I'd check it out. I think you'd love it. The Power of Now was great, but it was a little bit, it was like hard for me to really grasp it. But then when I read The New Earth, it made a lot more sense.
One of his books, I was told, was really trippy, and I don't recall the name of it, but it wasn't The New Earth. It wasn't The Power of Now. It was something red or dragon, or I feel something along those lines. But someone in the, I guess, dating community had mentioned it at, I guess, World Summit with RSD, and you know, just mentioned how I guess it was kind of like a paradigm shift of thought for them.
Yeah, very powerful stuff, and everyone takes away something different, just like, you know, the choice program, and anytime you're doing personal growth and looking at yourself, you know, you're going to have a different experience than the person next to you.
Definitely. So I think that, you know, the from getting to a practical perspective of what that mushrooms experience did to me, is I feel it allowed me to, A, be more vulnerable and be more empathetic and to feel emotions of other people who have maybe have lived different lives from me in a more strengthened way.
Gotcha. Yeah, and that's, you know, our power is in our vulnerability. And so many people have so many walls up, you know, of showing that or just showing their human side or showing emotions, especially guys that get into dating and pickup. You know, almost every single guy, and myself included, had some difficulty showing our emotions, right? No one can feel you. They won't give a fuck about who you are, what you're doing.
Exactly. So I guess I mentioned a couple things. I guess the third one would be, I mean, if we're talking about just things that matter from a practical standpoint, it would just be purely logistics and just realizing the power of logistics and you know, where I live now and where I lived, I guess in my heyday is just right in a very busy downtown center of Santa Monica. And just a lot of entertainment around here, a lot of bars and restaurants, and living right in the core. And that that definitely, from a practical standpoint, had a big impact, I should say.
You were in Canada before, right?
I was in Canada when I was a student. So, but in my adult life after college, I have always been in California.
And you made a conscious choice to move there for the social reasons.
I made a conscious choice to move here because Canada is it's an amazing city for middle class. It's an amazing city for like a good life. It's a little cold, which I wasn't a fan of. And as someone who really cared about lifestyle design, I didn't want to be in a place where, you know, 10 or let's say 8 or 9 months out of the year, you're kind of hibernating and you're not like, you're not able to go outside and enjoy things and, you know, seeking the warmer weather and also the country that historically has had access to all the markets, like just the capitalism of the United States. I feel if you're very ambitious, then the States is the best place to be.
So I know you were discussing with some of the guys on the boat how you became a citizen. Was that a difficult process? It sounds like a
very difficult,
but worth it.
Very difficult, especially the time that I was applying. It was, you know, just a few years after 9/11, and immigration really froze up, and I had a long waiting period after I'd already had my ducks in order to just wait for my numbers to become available, and it took about 7 years to get my green card, and finally got it, and decided, you know, after that to, you know, take advantage of the entrepreneurial opportunities that exist in the States. So, but I started in real estate development and was sponsored through my company. And, it was, a patient, arduous process, but, you know, I was an educated guy, was able to add value to my company. And, you know, that's really what the States wants to see when they accept immigrants is, you know, does this person add value to the country or are they going to just live off welfare? So it was tough, but I was able to do it the right way and the long way.
Yeah, it sounds like we have similar stories. I, out of college, had a job in finance. I did a little bit of real estate stuff as well. It was more of an internship. But that company basically closed its doors in 2008. We know when shit hit the fan. That's when I started Inner Confidence. And, you know, being an entrepreneur is amazing. It gives you the freedom to build your own life, build your own lifestyle. It can be tough as well because, you know, you're the only one kind of cracking the whip unless you have a business partner that'll do it.
Definitely.
So sometimes I struggle with staying motivated and, you know, keeping my head to the grindstone. But it sounds like that came pretty easy to you when you started, you know, working 100 hours a week and building your business so fast. How were you able to do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was growing the business 25 to 50% per month. And I was, I guess, motivated partially through my brother who, you know, he had run that business prior to me being involved and failed at it. He didn't have the business background, but he had the definitely the ambition and the aggressiveness. So we were actually great business partners because he would just consistently grow. He'd want to grow extremely fast with sales, open up new supplier accounts, you know, every day. You know, he would act first, ask questions later, whereas I'm more ask questions first, act later, and more of a planner and analyzer. So, you know, I provided the discipline. I provided the ability to manage a team and, you know, had the business background of, you know, an economics degree and 4 years in real estate development. So combined, you know, we created little motivators for ourselves. And I'll give you a couple examples. You know, I programmed it into my phone where every time we got a sale, it would do a cha-ching sound, which was, you know, kind of Pavlov's dog reinforcement of, hey, you're doing a good job. And that was like a little life hack that we implemented that really helped. And then we had a little prize thing where every time we got a $10,000 sales day, we would go for sushi. So we wouldn't have sushi normally unless we had a $10,000 sales day. And anytime we got a new high sales day, we went for lobster, which is both of our favorite foods. The gamification of, you know, the struggle and the grind that we were in just kind of made it a little bit more bearable and fun. And, you know, we were both motivated by tasty foods and you know, little life hack, but I felt that it kind of helped through those times.
Yeah. I mean, you never know how something small like that can have a huge impact.
Definitely.
And how did you kind of manage your social life during this period?
So I guess during the period where I first built my business, I was on and off with a long-term, I guess the longest relationship I had. It was with a much older woman, and you know, I had dated her when I was in Palm Springs, Palm Desert, when I first moved down to California. And you know, she was really supportive, and there, I guess through, you know, my real estate career and the start of my business, I had moved to LA and she lived in Palm Springs, so I wasn't seeing her as much. So I wasn't really dating per se then. I mean, we weren't exclusive when I moved to LA, so maybe I had a few dates here and there, but you know, I was not focused on dating at all or social aspect at all at that point. It was only after I started to achieve success and started to have employees that I let myself do social activities. So I, you know, at one point I think we had as many as 13 employees. Things were running along. The daily operations were no longer dependent on me. So I was able to get into things like, you know, hobbies like off-roading. I would go to Glamis and go, you know, ATVing or, you know, purchase a dirt bike and would take advantage of that aspect of California, go skiing, started just doing adventurous things. So I don't feel that I really cashed in on the foundation that I was building until the age of 26, I would say. I remember at around 26, I started having fun. Before then, I was just all business.
Wow. It takes a lot of dedication. I mean, I certainly struggle with that. Any tips on how, you know, you can just kind of put your head down and do it? It was just kind
you
of
have
came
to
naturally.
Fully immerse yourself. And, you know, every close friend of mine that I know who kind of has any sort of passive income where they're living a great lifestyle, they went through a period and the period varies. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's 3 months, maybe it's 6 months, but usually around that time period, maybe it's 2 years in one friend's case, but you know, not as intense, where they just had their head in the sand and their life was their business. And I could think there's a saying that said, you know, I do what others are not willing to do for a period of time so that later I may do what others are not able to do. And I'm paraphrasing here. But
I've heard that quote. It's spot on.
Yeah. So it means, you know, you have your period where you live and breathe your business. And, you know, I had one example is a former best friend of mine who he was kind of, I guess, my former roommate in Toronto. And he was making great money when I was in college. I think it was making like 10, 15K a month. And it was all, it all stemmed from a 3-4 month period where he, that his whole life was just building his business and doing everything right. And, you know, the rest after that, when things took off, like, you know, he could do, he could write his own ticket. He could do whatever he wants. So it all started with that, that 3 month, period where he was just totally focused on his craft. I have another friend who, this is a recent example, and it hasn't necessarily, come to fruition yet, but this friend has gone through a long path being an immigrant and not having papers and finally getting his papers. He's from London, and he's developing this pet app, this dog training app, and which I think is going to be a game changer and a totally industry disruptor. And he showed me the demo the other day, and this thing is legit, like, well thought of in every aspect, like every I dotted, every T crossed, just everything taken into account. And this dude has been working like crazy with so much sacrifice socially, so being broke for like most of the past 3 years, staying on people's couches, not having a car in LA, just all kinds of sacrifices for years now. And, you know, finally he's raised some capital. He's going to all these networking events and getting amazing traction. He's at alpha version of his software within a few weeks of his app. And, you know, recently he met with like a big player in the industry who just is blown away with his idea. And it came from, you know, years of work. And I guess for the past like 6 months, really like grinding out on this app. And I, you know, he could probably get a buyout of like $5 or $10 million of this app, probably within a couple of years.
Wow.
So that's another example. Another example, I guess, in a different context, I have a friend who is does really well on YouTube and has, I guess you could say, a channel and a website that focuses on dating guides for men who travel to Southeast Asia. but not really just dating. It's more like lifestyle, like, you know, just everything, tips and tricks. And he'd actually be a great guest on this podcast, and I could connect you with him after. But he basically, his philosophy was, I'm going to work for 6 months. I'm going to save money. He was a great saver. And I'm going to just travel the world until the money runs out and then go back and work more. And so he could earn more and then go back out traveling. So he did this for a while. He started, you know, maybe making $500 to $1,000 a month from his YouTube channel. And eventually he got to the point where he maybe made 4K a month and paid for his lifestyle to then quit his job and travel indefinitely. And once he took that plunge to travel indefinitely, things just blew up even more because he was able to focus on his content even more. And now he's just spending all day just enjoying his life, editing his videos. He's a gamer, so he plays Quake or Overwatch or whatnot. And, you know, it's gotten to the 5 figures a month level and just living an amazing lifestyle. But it took a few years. It took a few years to gain traction. So the common theme here is putting your blinders on and having a period of sacrifice where you're not necessarily, you know, doing things for the immediate reward, but you're so focused on the task at hand, and whatever comes out at the end of it is, it may not look exactly like what you had envisioned in the first place, but if you take your ego out of the equation and more so treat your business and idea as an organic process that no matter what it becomes is going to meet the needs of the market, then you're going to get there eventually through iteration.
Right. Yeah, very well said. What about mentors? How'd you navigate that along the way? I overheard your conversation on the boat and you were talking how valuable that was for you.
I've been hugely impacted by having a great mentor most of my adult life. I was fortunate enough when I was 17 where my baby brother, I had graduated high school early and was cold calling all day for web development, getting clients. And my younger brother, he was in his 8th grade class and had a speaker come in and speak to his class and had brought home this sheet from the speaker that listed maybe 12 to 15 books that were recommended for the students to read. And my brother showed it to me, since I probably had, you know, about half those books that I had either had in my library, or maybe my brother noticed that I had rented them from the library, borrowed them from the library. And so he showed it to me, and he was offering to mentor one student from the class. So I took the liberty and went ahead and emailed him, because I felt connected to what he was saying, just given his taste in books. And I apparently was the only person to reply, and I wasn't even a student in the class. So that started a relationship when I was 17 with my mentor, who at that time was building his first company. And you know, he later sold it for hundreds of millions of dollars and became very, very successful. And it's just, to me, someone who you know, has so much chutzpah and so much of that go-getter mentality that I've learned so much from him. And I think the reason I'm here in the States is because of him, because in that process to get a job in a very difficult to get into industry of real estate development, and then combine that with having a company take you under their wing and sponsor you and go through the legal issues of immigration. I mean, I was very fortunate. And the only reason I got to that level mentally was because of my mentor, and because he trained me to think like a CEO and to think from the hirer's perspective, and to create a very, very effective job campaign that was hard to say no to a hire that had the need.
Yeah.
So, huge impact on my life. Anytime there's a big decision, I usually have called him. And, you know, he's kind of a, I don't know if you're familiar with the Rich Dad Poor Dad book.
Of course. Yep.
He's kind of like my rich dad. So, you know, my parents being very successful in their relationship and love and family. But, you know, my mentor being someone who was like kind of my business father, my business mentor, that had a huge impact on my life and still does to this day. We still talk and, you know, still have a great relationship.
And that's cool that you reached out to him, even though you weren't in the class and you were the only one to do so.
Right.
Yeah. I think there's so many opportunities that people miss when it comes to finding mentors, and people love to mentor others. You know, it's one of the coolest things you can do, but a lot of people are just too afraid to ask, and you'd be surprised.
You know, I feel that one thing that students need to realize is they're in a unique position in college or high school level where they don't pose as a threat to tycoons of industry. And I remember I realized this at, you know, 16 or 17, or maybe it was a bit later, actually. I think it was in college, so maybe 18 or 19. And I took it upon myself to take a leadership position in the real estate club in University of Toronto, and ended up, you know, starting as vice president and then moved to president of the real estate club. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to leverage this title and this position I'm in to connect with people, to connect with titans of industry in Toronto, where I grew up. So, you know, I ended up meeting with, I call them informational interviews, where I said, hey, I'm president of the real estate club here at U of T. I would love to, you know, interview you for just to understand, you know, your role in the industry, this and that. So, you know, I reached out to the top CEOs of the top developers in Toronto, and I just sat down with them and got to know them and asked questions. And, you know, through that process, I ended up getting my first job in real estate development, which, you know, probably helped me move to the California and get the job there, since I had experience. And I reached out to, you know, Mitch Goldhar, who, you know, he's a very, very successful, Canadian who, I think at that time, built over 50% of the Walmart-oriented shopping centers in Canada, and you know, was one of the Canadian billionaires, and ended up having him speak at my real estate club and having him invite me to audit his MBA-level real estate development course, which was just so such a great opportunity. And you know, since when do you get to have that chance as an undergrad to, you know, have this course taught by a titan of industry and to get it for free? So you know, I kind of opened myself up to opportunities by you know, putting myself out there and saying, hey, I'm thirsty for knowledge. And being a student, I didn't pose a threat to these guys and was able to get access to some of these amazing thinkers. Even reached out to Donald Trump at the time. You know, he had a great reputation in real estate in that era. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think he wanted too much money to come speak at our club, or money at all.
Yeah.
So didn't end up making that happen, but you know, we tried.
That's super cool. There's that, what you're saying reminded me of the, it's like a Pitbull song. It says, ask for money, get advice, ask for advice, get money twice. It doesn't, you know, and like you said, especially when you're a student, you're not posing as a threat. And you ask for people for advice. They love to give advice. They love to mentor people. They love to share their knowledge.
And, oh, yeah. And even when you're not a student, when I started out in the industry in California, I reached out to the top developers. I remember, you know, reading an article about this guy and noticing him in the paper a few times and just sent him an email. And, you know, I think I tried three times to meet with him, finally met for lunch. And, yeah, I just wanted to pick his brain. And, you know, I was, again, not really a threat because, you know, people like to mentor, you know, young guys. I was 23, 24 at the time, and just reached out to him and had that relationship. Same with, I looked at, hey, who's a top broker in California real estate? And I found the guy who's a top commercial real estate broker, like 3-4 years running. And again, took 3 or 4 emails to get him to meet, and, you know, I met with him. Asked him advice. He gave me a bunch of life advice. He gave me a bunch of real estate advice. And, you know, he told me he was thinking, hey, who's this kid that, like, you know, is just being so persistent and, like, you know, emailing me over and over again to meet. And, you know, just, I guess, wore him down and ended up meeting with him when he came out to the desert for lunch. So, yeah, it could work. Yeah, definitely.
And how did you make the transition from real estate development into, you know, selling stuff on Amazon, basically? That, because it seems like a big jump.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I remember posing a question to the CEO. I was working under my boss in real estate development, you know, doing every aspect from building financial models to raising a bunch of equity, raising debt, even filling in as a superintendent, property management, leasing, pretty much every aspect of real estate development. And he had a partner who was, I guess, boss number two. And I really respected this guy. He had built like over 50% of the golf course oriented communities in the Coachella Valley. And I asked him if he were to give advice to a young person, what would it be? And he said to get into tech. And this is a guy who's built his life around real estate. So
right.
I was like, hey, I kind of have talent for tech. I taught myself programming at the age of 13 and took a break. I didn't touch code at all or programming at all for 4, 5, 6 years when I was doing real estate, but I still had that background. So eventually when 2008 happened, I, you know, was about to get my green card. And, you know, once I kind of had that green card and had the ability to quit my job, I did, and I immediately started a business with my brother, who I had said had ran it before. So we started very slow. It was like a part-time effort, and it was just, hey, my brother knew that I was free now, that I had had some time, and he knew the skills that I had. So he approached me about the idea. And then my best friend at the time, he also, you know, I told him the same story, and he approached me with a business idea he wanted to partner up with me in. And we were creating a software that was visualizing the online sales process. There were like 3 parts to it. Traffic, conversion, and then kind of sales per customer, or optimizing like the long-term aspect, and we were making this whole conversion process very, very visual, and basically creating software to help with every step of the way. So that kind of was my main business after real estate development for maybe 4 or 5 months, working on the idea with my best friend. And I was working on my brother's business kind of on the side. And long story short, we were working in the desert where I was living. I had a house at the time, and things were going really, really well. I was exercising the same discipline as I did later when I started the business, or really started doing the business with my brother. I was maybe only sleeping 5 hours a day, eating super healthy, going to the gym, working the rest of the time on the blueprint for the software. Things were maybe 90%, 95% done. I decided to move to LA, which is both where we wanted to be. And the first weekend we moved to LA, we go to a strip club. I think it was a Body Shop on Sunset.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we have a good time. We were out of the strip club, and I think we're on the street getting into my friend's car. And we meet these two strippers who just got off their shift. And long story short, they follow us back up to the house that we're staying at in the hills, and, you know, end up banging both of them. And my friend ends up in a relationship with his girl. And okay. He just gets into cocaine and strippers and basically fucks up his life.
Yeah.
So from that moment, he never really worked again. He never really worked on the business again. And I again saw the writing on the wall and started shifting my time away from the software idea towards my brother's idea. And eventually it was just clear that, you know, he was out of the picture, and I just went 100% in. And that's when my business started growing 25 to 50% per month.
Wow.
And it was a good time. That was like maybe 2009-ish.
It's a cool story. The strippers and cocaine route.
The Hollywood vortex that claims so many souls.
Fuck.
Just another victim in that realm.
Did he ever get back into anything? Or
Sad story, he never did. It led to a series of unfortunate events, all from that one weekend that... you know, he's you know, now 40 years old and living back with his parents in Canada, and just struggling to make any money. And I think the reason is because of just a lot of regret and you know, mindset. It's just hard for him to almost forgive himself and to clear his mind. He's done a lot of drugs throughout the years, and he's just not the same.
Mm, it's brutal.
So let that be a
great lesson.
The great lesson. You know, Mr. T is coming in with this story over here.
No,
don't do drugs, kids.
It's so cool because you see the paths just completely, you know, fork in the road. Yep.
Exactly.
And that can so easily happen to guys too.
Yeah, and your mind is something you want to protect as much as possible. And I think you just naturally getting older, you know, you maybe get less sharp than you used to be. So, you know, you combine that with substances over time, and it could get dangerous.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I didn't really ever start drugs or any sort of partying until after 30 as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So the only one. Yeah. And I've been careful with my selection, and, you know, try to pick my drugs in a way that is not necessarily to get high, but more, you know, the mushrooms or ayahuasca oriented things, which is, you know, trying to seek meaning, or right. The occasional edible to, again, similar effect to mushrooms, like where you maybe get something out of it, like some sort of profound life lesson.
Definitely. Yeah. I've been wanting to try ayahuasca. I'll have to do it at some point. And maybe Burning Man, I'll try some LSD this year. Who knows? I shied away from it last year. I was having more of the, I don't know, more of a relationship style burn that ended in...
in ended
poorly. Ended in me in tears. And no, mine was much worse, I think.
Okay.
I thought I had my soulmate, and then she fucked my best friend in my Airstream.
Okay, so similar in a way, but not quite.
Much, yeah. But not to get into that, I'm sure I've maybe talked about it on other episodes. I'm not sure, actually. It'd be a good story, though. She had one rule. Don't fuck my friends, and don't fuck my friends in my own RV. She broke both. Oh, well.
I actually may be going to Burning Man this year. It's possible. I was just approached by a friend yesterday who had a space in his yurt. So I'm going to be making that decision in the next couple of weeks. So I'll have to keep you informed.
Oh, yeah. So you might be going, huh?
Might be. 50-50 right now.
I'm also on the fence, but I'm guessing I'll go. I don't know how we could possibly miss it. It's been such a crazy, pivotal 2 weeks of my life. Just so many realizations about myself, realizations about the world. It's a really, really cool event that anyone, I think, should check out at some point. The dust is not that bad, I promise you guys. It's not even dust.
Wear a mask. Be like an Asian tourist for a week.
Exactly. The SARS mask.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, man. Another question before we end. I like to ask all my guests is favorite books or favorite book?
I would say my favorite two books. I mean, I have, fiction and nonfiction, but obviously nonfiction are the helpful ones. And I definitely would point to two books that were very impactful in my life. One being Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And I read that early when I was 17. And I think it was like one of the first self-development books I read, or maybe one of the first. And it's just like one of the self-development books that started them all. And if you read other books after that, it all kind of stems from that book that was written, or the idea started to be written in, I think, the 30s or 40s. So it's just a classic that I felt is just simple and just a great read. And then a more practical level book is 4-Hour Workweek, Tim Ferriss. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been an incredibly impactful book that has helped so many people and is responsible for so many businesses and responsible for so many lifestyles. And, Tim Ferriss is a great dude and he has a great podcast and great line of books. And, he's just a super awesome human. So definitely those two books are kind of like cornerstones of any personal library.
For sure. I've obviously read the 4-Hour Workweek. That's a big favorite of mine. I've never read Think and Grow Rich. I know the basic premise. Maybe I've read some notes somewhere about it, and I know the idea, mastermind concept, all that stuff. But I should maybe sit down and actually have a read, because I'm sure you'll get a lot more depth out of reading it versus just,
I think with our habits and lifestyle in mind, I think there's one chapter in particular that is a great read for us called Sexual Transmutation. Hmm. And just for that chapter alone, I think I've read that maybe 10 or 15 times. So for that chapter alone, it's definitely recommended.
I'll definitely have a read of that one then. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, because I feel like I'm in a similar point in my life, may not look like that to the outside source, but, I've been having lots of sex, lots of fun, lots of crazy parties for, 5 or 6 years, mm-hmm. since turning around 30. And I'm 36 now, so I'm starting to get the itch for a family, something a mm-hmm. little more stable. So I want to get what's been your experience kind of going through that transition?
Oh, I definitely could talk on this topic, very in depth, because it's very much the situation of my life, and we're pretty much the same age. And it sounds like, we both had the start of our fun period at the same age as well. Mm-hmm. When I turned 30, I think that's when shit got crazy. That was the start of, I guess, the crazy period. And it's interesting because most people have, maybe that period in their 20s or whatnot. But you and I sounds like we had a similar timeline. And, maybe it's a matter of, having the means to have more free time and the resources to allow for that and whatnot. And, that period was just absolutely crazy for me. And I guess the difference between you and I is that I entered a long-term relationship at some point in that period. Mm-hmm. I guess when I was 33 was the month I met my ex-girlfriend was the month that was probably the craziest out of any months. I think I had been with it was like 21 or 22 new women that month.
Wow.
And which included like, I think two or three threesomes and an orgy and just crazy experiences. And, but then, you know, I was always open to relationship and, you know, my ex kind of stood out and I kind of had an emotional shift at the same time she did and just started to lose desire to be with the other women. And I think, you know, when you have abundance and that happens, that's pretty powerful because you're not doing it out of scarcity. You're not doing it out of fear. You're doing it because you really want it. And that experience I had of, you know, living with someone for almost 2 years and having that closeness and that reliability that you're going to come home to someone or someone's going to come home to you, it was kind of nice. And I've always been someone who wanted a relationship, but it's easy to get distracted in the newness of life and the strange and just a constant stimulation. But I think, you know, we're also very overstimulated in today's society, and you almost have to make a decision whether you want to chase that overstimulation or if you want to have like kind of a peace of mind that's more sustainable internally within yourself. And I think the lifestyle of that, you know, you and I have both had at one point or another, where is the end to it?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the end? What's the next craziest thing that you could do?
Right. And eventually you kind of hit you're like, what the fuck else could I do? You know,
right. And I started off by mentioning that, like, where, you know, you're kind of like on that path to, you know, the Dan Bilzerian type lifestyle. And, you know, I mean, yeah, he's like the kind of epitome of that kind of lifestyle. And I would love to really understand, you know, the depth of his psyche and whether there's a lot of fulfillment in there or whether it's a happiness that is just born through distraction and constant source of stimuli where there is really no downtime. It's just a constant, you know, stimulation that keeps up the high and keeps up the drug. And, you know, you kind of have to make a decision if you're going to kind of go for that lifestyle or if you're going to go for more of a lack of stimulation and kind of an internal sense of well-being. So I've gone through both. I've gone through the crazy period, and through that, I've decided that I want something more meaningful and a family situation. And where I am now is kind of struggling between the lifestyle stimulation that I've tasted and experienced in depth to something that's maybe a little bit more boring at first, but more meaningful. So specifically, it gets down to there's like a couple of different types of women that appeal to men. There's like the fun types that just like you're totally attracted to, and it's just like, you know, they're maybe bad for you and they just turn you on to no ends and just like have so much fun. And, you know, maybe they're bisexual, maybe they're crazy, maybe they, you know, want to go out partying with you and pick up girls together, whatever it may be. Versus someone who you look at and think, wow, like this woman is going to be a great mother to my children. And I love them because of their character and because of who they are as a person. And it's difficult for us who have been overstimulated to slow down and build and take the time to build what is really necessary to establish that deeper kind of love. But I think being conscious and aware of it is a good first step.
For sure.
Because it is hard to find.
Yeah, and especially depending on the environment you're in. You know, sometimes you need to completely change that environment. You know, for example, you're not going to find maybe a couple, actually. Some of the girls on the boat could be mother of a children type. You never know, right? And people obviously change as they get older and their values change and so on and so forth. But, you know, if you're hanging out in those sort of crowds, you might have to make a significant life alteration to find.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So then it's like, and, you know, I don't know the answer per se of whether, you know, in my own ambitions and your own ambitions, if this is something that, you know, is really going to fulfill us to find that person and that kind of slower lifestyle. Maybe we go through that and then think, oh, that's not really what I want. I want to, you know, just go back to my old ways. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I do feel that once the only reason I'm unsure right now, and I think that anyone would be unsure, is because they don't have that person standing in front of them in their life.
Right.
And once you do, then just all other things become unimportant and your priorities shift. And it's the same thing when like children come into the picture, that your priorities shift. And it's just like the things that used to matter no longer matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of tough to slow down from the lifestyle that you and I have both lived, but it's a shift. And I think that, you know, when you find that woman that you want to build your life with, then, it just all kind of falls into play.
Yeah, I think so too. I've definitely been living the Dan Blazarian lifestyle for the extreme for the last 7 months, basically since January of 2018, when I partnered up with Vitaly and started doing these crazy trips.
Definitely.
I mean, I can't imagine, you know, this will sound like I'm not trying to brag at all. I'm literally saying my life might be crazier than Dan's with the amount of girls around here, you know? And you know, it's fun. There's tons of highs, but there is a lot of emptiness as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're chasing that rush all the time.
Well, here's the thing. It's a chase the rush. It's a chase the newness. And I have, you know, friends of mine who, for example, love foreign chicks and love Asian chicks. And they, you know, but they're also repeating the same dates over and over again with, you know, girls who, let's say, don't speak English very well. And it's like, yeah, you go through that initial period where you meet someone and you have the same sort of conversations, but it's like, you know, what substance is there after that?
Yeah.
If these girls don't even share the same culture or, you know, basic communication with you, if you know, if their English is not perfect, and even if they, you know, are so-called fluent in English, but it wasn't the first language, there's almost subtleties of the nuances of language or the sub-communication or the pop culture even that you cannot connect on. And I feel that is really where the joy is over time. So once you go over the basics of like meeting and flirting and fucking and having that like romance, then you're left with you know, something that is just boring, and then you go on to the next one, and it's just like a repeat of the process. And you know, that's for me why I feel I've done the foreign girlfriend, you know, a few times in my life, and I know enough to experience that, hey, when I travel and I'm meeting someone who, you know, isn't American or Canadian or has English as their first language, or at least very fluent and, you know, pop culture influenced, then it's only going to get so far, and then you're just going to be bored and missing that connection. And, you know, that's why I'm in a position right now where I could be traveling full time or a lot of the year, but because I want to move my life forward, I am totally loving and appreciating California, because this is a place where you have a lot of beautiful women, and as difficult as they are sometimes, you have the potential to create some of the most deepest and authentic connections.
Definitely.
Because it's cool chicks. A lot of, you know, educated women and girls who you'd have a lot of laughs with and inside jokes with, and and fun with. It's just, yeah, it's a lot of competition here. And if you're like a white male, let's say going to Thailand or like to Mexico City, then yeah, you're going to feel like a king, and it's a drug, and it makes you feel great. And it's like, you know, why do we even bother with American women? But, and I have a lot of friends who have this philosophy. But you know, they're usually younger, usually in their 20s, or, you know, maybe sometimes a little bit older. But maybe they're not aware of the pattern that they're in. And right. The fact that they are these mini romances time and time again until they get bored and then repeat it. Or maybe they've been, you know, so frustrated with their experiences with dating back home and not getting that girl that they really liked, that it's like, okay, who wouldn't want to feel like a king and to have, you know, that amazing adrenaline rush of, you know, multiple sources of love and or seemingly love time and time again. You know, it's a drug at the end of the day.
It is.
So to have that depth of connection, you know, it's harder to find, but you make sacrifices just like you make in business. You know, that 3 months of you know, working on your business 100 hours a week. I mean, if you apply the same principle to you know, your own relationship life and having a discipline to say no to those distractions, then I think it could yield incredible results. So I recently actually sat down with a rabbi. You know, I grew up Jewish. My mom's Jewish. And so I sat down with a rabbi, and I didn't tell him a lot about my life, but a friend of mine had recommended I go see him. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect. He's like, I can't remember the name of it, but he sets up people together. And, you know, I didn't know if that was it or if he was just going to talk to me. And, you know, he just talked to me, gave me a copy of his book. And at first, how I kind of gave him a sense of the situation, I kind of mentioned the boat trip that I just got off of. And, you know, he kind of immediately had a picture of me and a judgment. But from talking to me more, he realized that I do want, you know, something more meaningful. And his recommendation, which, you know, who knows, at some point I may take, maybe after the summer in LA, was to take 3 months to take a break from dating and just to completely focus on self-development and to ask yourself, if the woman of my dreams or the woman who I would see myself with is in front of me right now, would I be the man who she would want in her life? And, you know, then he told me that, hey, if the answer is yes, then you've got problems, because there's a lot of, you know, maybe internal, you know, self-image issues that, hey, maybe you're too full of yourself or whatnot. But the point is to seek to become a better man and have faith that the right woman will come in your life. I had a similar story from a friend of mine, Josh, who said, okay, well, you know, maybe you should take 3 months, not necessarily to take a break from dating, but just take a break from being very sex focused and just, you know, hang out with girls as friends and just not even have it be about sex in any way. Just, you know, to just have fun and just experience people without kind of focusing on, you know, closing the deal. And I think, I don't know if this is your situation, but I know it's mine, where immediately if I'm on a date, like I just naturally take action in a way that tends to lead to sex, almost subconsciously. And it's just that I've learned over time. And, you know, I'll tell you this, in my dating world, I've never really been one who excels at the approach per se. Mm-hmm. I've never been extremely great or, I guess, comfortable with approaching. I mean, I've done it, maybe with like nightlife. But I'm awesome at first dates. And if I could get an hour or two with a girl over dinner or drinks, that's where I excel greatly. And that's, you know, from the shrooms experience, from the self-development and just, you know, who I've become as a person. And that's where I've excelled. So I tend to then sprinkle in the sexual intent, and that's what led to my much success over the years when I focused on that.
It's really important to know your strengths, you know, and, yeah, that is, I 100% agree from, you know, our time spent together, you're really easy to connect with, And, you know, you get in front of any girl, she's going to see, wow, this guy's not only cool and attractive and fun, but he can really add a lot of substance and value to my life. Whereas, you know, it's a lot harder to display that as on an approach, of course.
Definitely. And, and like you said, everyone has their strengths. And, you know, I think you're a great example of someone who's just awesome in a group situation and creating that group dynamics, whereas I'm more like one-on-one. So, you know, we all have our strengths that we kind of recognize and work to our advantage. So
definitely,
that's a good point.
So to I don't want to get too much on the seeking arrangements tangent, but I know that's one one really good lead pool or
yep.
Is that what you're using mainly to find dates these days?
I haven't been on there in probably 2 or 3 years, but okay. My period of the most craziness was I guess a period of 6-7 months when I was on that website. Mm-hmm. But I was doing well before that, and I was recently I guess rereading my blog that I wrote when I did a 30-day challenge of going out 30 nights in a row. And I remember, I guess just before I joined SA, or maybe a couple months before, I ended up banging like 15 chicks in 30 days during that period. So that was all from night game, from day game, from, I guess, mostly night game.
And a lot of approaching, right?
Online. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say, I mean, the night game was mostly through when I went to Mexico City a couple times. So, you know, for me, it was easier there.
Yeah.
And then from online dating. And I was, you know, what you focus on, you excel in. And I was focused on that and was reaping the rewards. And then when a buddy of mine who's a dating coach, he posted something about SA, and I thought, oh, this seems interesting. It's not what I thought, maybe. So let me try joining. And you know, I took it as the approach of like, hey, I'm a successful guy. I'm treating this as a dating site, looking for girls who, you know, want to date a successful guy. And, you know, if they kind of ask, hey, what type of arrangement are you into or whatever, I'm like, I tell them straight up, hey, this is my perspective. And, you know, like I've always dated pretty girls. I've always treated them well. And, you know, I want to have a great impact on a woman's life, whether it mean great experiences or mentoring or whatnot. So, you know, ended up meeting a lot of girls through that website. It kind of got a little bit of an obsession. And I ended up meeting my ex-girlfriend that I lived with for a year and a half on that website. So, you know, it's not necessarily used for a traditional arrangement. I mean, definitely there's different schools of thought on that. And, you know, some girls will definitely like hate me for that, but because they're, you know, gold diggers or whatnot and want a certain thing, but others, girls for that matter, like are totally on the same page as me from that website. So I had a great filter of filtering out the whorey type girls from the, you know, maybe girls who want just a guy who's not broke and can actually like, you know, pay for dates and stuff. So
right.
I think I used it in a very honest way.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, it was just a very transparent, brutal honesty. And, you know, you end up having a filter of a lot of beautiful women on that website who are more fun. And I specifically not rejoined that website because it's almost too good and too much of a drug. And it's definitely more on the fun side. And it's more difficult to find a girl of real character and principles, which I think is kind of stating the obvious.
Yeah,
on that website.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure there's, you know, just like you, you'd be an example of, you know, kind of the ideal man that I think a lot of these girls would want to meet if they're looking for someone of substance. And obviously you're not on the site now, but mm-hmm. you're someone that could be on the site, right? So I'm sure there's your counterpart, but might have to go through a ton of prospects to find, and maybe not the best place to search.
If I wanted to live a different lifestyle, if I said, hey, you know, I don't really care necessarily about getting a family. If it happens, it happens. But I just want to like live for the moment and have as much fun as possible. I would totally be on that side. But I'm trying to, you know, place my own discipline in a life that has a lot of freedom. So that's specifically why I don't rejoin it. But I mean, hey, that may change in the future. I don't think it will, but never say never. But it's definitely it was an interesting learning experience, and I think I was on there maybe for a year, and in that year I think I was with like 120 new girls.
Jesus.
And it was just crazy.
Yeah, it's a great resource if you understand the dynamics, for sure.
So understand the dynamics, yes.
Yes, yes. So given the constraints you're working with now, you know, how, you know, where are you looking for women? How actively are you pursuing?
So I, you know, I'm kind of focused a lot on business right now, but I also don't want to go through a period where I'm not actively searching. I think you always, especially if that's something, you know, for me, I want like a family in the next few years. So I want to always have like a foot in the searching door. So my comfort zone is online because it's convenient. I can do it from home. I can do it after work, spend like 40 minutes a day, you know, looking for prospects there. But I have noticed that, you know, the quality online is, maybe I'm just spoiled from SA. But, you know, if I go back to Tinder or OkCupid or Match.com or whatever, it's just you're going to get gems. But it's a lot of searching through, and then you find a girl that you like, and, you know, you're just a man sending a text message to a hot girl with the inbox of 200 messages. So it's hard to stand out. So, you know, lately I've kind of almost taken the advice of my friend Josh, where I'm almost not directly looking for women. I'm more just being social and just doing fun activities and meeting up with girls who are just friends and not trying to fuck them and just, you know, developing your circle of women and men for that matter that, you know, you're just being out there and social with. So I'm trying that as something that I haven't really excelled at or focused my time and energy on in the past, but just something different, knowing that, hey, over time, you know, I'm going to run across someone who's a friend of a friend, and those are some of the best situations that you could be in. The other situation that I'm contemplating is because I live in Santa Monica downtown at arguably the number one day game spot in the U.S., I would really love to dedicate some time every day to approaching girls during the day, which is a stretch for me, which is a little bit uncomfortable, but definitely something that I'm sure once you get momentum with, just takes off. And
definitely. I've had a...
It could definitely take off.
Yes. I've probably done... Oh, God knows how many thousands of day game approaches, it, not only in general, but I've definitely done over 1,000 at Third Street Promenade.
Really?
Years, yes.
Well, years ago. Wow. Okay. Well, when you're in town, we should take a little walk.
Yeah. You know, I have a secret. Don't walk down the promenade. Walk down the surrounding streets.
I literally was just thinking that yesterday when I was walking, because it's a little bit too overwhelming and too crazy on the promenade. There's just like so much stimulation. Yeah, when I'm walking on Broadway or Santa Monica or Arizona, it's a lot, you know, more chill and viable for a conversation and with less distraction.
Right, and you won't come across as someone trying to sell them something or get them to sign up for some cause, which is, you know, you have so many people approaching for other reasons on the promenade.
Yeah. It's true. I used to be one of those when I had a little joint venture business selling drones on the promenade. I get that.
Yeah.
Which was actually great. That was a great experience and really helped with my approaching by being a... I guess I was mostly training the salespeople, but sales skills and pickup skills kind of go hand in hand.
yeah, you got to be able to face rejection and be okay with a no and not let it, you know, get you down.
Definitely. So I feel like living a block away from the promenade is an incredible opportunity. So, yeah, that's so interesting that you're familiar with this area and that you've, I guess, considered it your stomping grounds at one point.
Yeah, I used to live on California and 4th or 5th.
Okay, so I live at 4th and Broadway.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Marina Del Rey for 2 years as well. And I would take clients to approach, you know, every week. So 3rd Street was, you know, the most happening place. So that's where we'd go. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I probably have 50 hidden camera videos of me approaching girls on 3rd Street Promenade. I'll send you some funny rejection ones.
Yeah, that would be hilarious to see.
I even had my girlfriend approach guys and videotape that. That was pretty interesting.
Wow. So I'm curious to throw the question back at you with your lifestyle. And, you know, you're telling me you have a similar desire to transition. I'm curious, how do you see your game plan rolling out in the next few years to kind of transition to something that will help you reach your goals?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because it's good to talk it through. And just listening to what you've shared in the last few minutes has been a really good refresher for me of something I've definitely been feeling and thinking about. And I can get too caught up in the adrenaline and the party and the nonsense that goes down here in Kiev, because I'm currently mm-hmm. living with Vitaly in basically mm-hmm. a model oh. house.
Yep.
You know,
model house. Love that term.
Six girls, a moho for short. Six girls living here at the moment. You know, I've probably slept with like five different girls in the last like 3 days.
When it rains, it pours. That's what I noticed with this.
Yes. You know, but the language barrier is huge.
Yes.
It's such a, you know, I haven't had any sort of depth in any of these relationships in a while, which is something I've been mm-hmm. missing. And yes. it's also tough, too, because there's not a lot of English speakers here at all. And so I've been definitely starved of deep, meaningful, intimate conversations and depth. Well, I've had a lot of surface level fun. Mm-hmm. It's been good from a work standpoint because I've really been focusing on this podcast and I've been getting a lot of that stuff done. And it's also a great city to be in because it's very cheap and it's cool. Wiley loves it. He's got lots of babysitters around. But yeah, in terms of, you know, finding someone that could be a good long-term partner, I don't think this is the best place to be. mm-hmm. I'm learning Russian, but like okay. you said, it doesn't, even if I were to be fluent, you're still missing all of the pop culture references, all of the, you know, just not knowing, just not having an amazing handle of the language will really impact your communication.
Definitely.
And fuck, I mean, it would probably take me 5 to 10 years to get to a place of fluency where that wouldn't be an issue, right?
And even then, yeah.
Even then. Yep. Which would put me about 45. And, you know, it wouldn't be too late, obviously, to start a family, but not ideal. I'd like to do something sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough. You know, I've been kind of deciding, you know, what I really want to focus on. The last 6 months I've been doing these parties and it's taken a lot more time than I expected. And, you know, there's not a lot of money in them. It's more of just a way to party for cheap, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a sustainable business by any means. In the beginning, going into it, I thought it might be. So, or at least in the way that I'd like to approach it, trying to turn, you know, these crazy parties that we're doing into a business could really kind of derail my long-term personal goals of
yes
finding starting a family and having more depth. And I had a lot of long-term relationships in my 20s. I was kind of like a serial I wasn't totally monogamous, you know, I had some fun, but I was like 3 year, 4 year, 2 year, 3 year relationships, like all back to back to back. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even think of a time where I was single for longer than 5 months between the ages of 18 till 35. And so when I ended my last relationship, which was about a year ago, June of 2017, I told myself,
same time as me, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what? I'm going to dedicate at least 6 months. I'm going to go as long as I can without jumping into another codependent relationship, which, you know, I would basically date like crazy for 3 to 4 months. Then I'd find one that I really liked and we'd get together, and then I'd be bored, or she would, either I was bored and I had the grass is greener conversation going on, or I'd find one who was just like a crazy party girl who would end up like totally just ruining my life and be heartbroken and devastated. So,
but they're so appealing. There's something so appealing about those girls on the surface.
Oh my God. They're never boring. Right. And I had like a 10-year run where I got bored in every single girl. And I thought I was cursed. I thought I was like, well, I'll never find a girl that will keep my interest. And then I had like 3 back to back to back, super hot, super fun, never got bored, never bored for a second. Everything was amazing. And then just total devastation because, that energy, it's like a drug. You know, I was very attracted to that party girl, fun, you know, super hot, everyone wants her, wanting that validation from other guys, look how hot my girl is sort of thing. But those girls, you know, they tend to have a lot of personality disorders. They can, you know, that's a huge rabbit hole we don't want to go down now, but you know, they're not looking, or maybe they're in a place in their life where they're not looking for that more meaningful, deeper connection. And or they don't have the self-awareness or the communication skills just to deal with problems and to build that sort of relationship. So instead of, you know, really trying to work on, all right, how is our communication and how is our relationship going awry in these certain situations, they just basically, you know, do whatever the easy thing is that'll tend to be kind of like a fuck you to your partner. So like 2 back-to-back girls, I'm like, these girls are perfect. They're hot. They're cool. They're fun. Everyone loves them. Like people would say to me all the time, oh my God, dude, you have the best girl in the world. And like, as a guy, like who doesn't want to hear that? Right. And
wow. So,
and then just being so distraught because of the problems behind closed doors in the relationship.
Exactly. So I guess I have a parallel situation of, you know, we ended the relationship in the same month that you ended yours. I guess it was June, or I think end of June 2017. And it was actually my first girlfriend who was that girl, who was that hot party girl. Everyone wanted her, never got bored, tons of fun. And, you know, I ended up ending the relationship. It was like the fourth attempt I had to end it, and finally just said, hey, in order to end this, I'm going to actually have to leave the country like the next day. So ended it one day, was on a plane to Canada the next day. But it was, you know, a lot of what you said, it's like, you know, you never get bored with them, but there are kind of personality disorders or just stuff behind closed doors that, hey, like all the guys who are after these girls, who are jealous of you, who says like, oh, this is like the great girl. It's almost like the way they treat their partners is very tough. And it's the problems that happen behind closed doors is what people don't get to see.
Yes.
And it's a lot to handle. And part of me just wants to say, hey, you know what? I'm just want to learn to accept that and deal with it, because at least then I'll never get bored. Versus taking a leap of faith and saying, okay, I'm going to go for the good girl who has more substance, who doesn't have those issues. And, you know, I won't get bored because I'll replace that with meaning and with, you know, with children and with finding ways to get excited about my partner that are beyond just the surface level overstimulation.
Right.
So I had always dated the good girls in terms of long-term relationships until my recent long-term relationship. Yep. And it was definitely an experience. And hey, like I said before at different times, I don't know what the right answer is. Maybe I'll come to the conclusion that, hey, that's really what life should be about, and having fun and just mitigating the situation, being a life mitigator of mitigating
damage control.
Damage control the rest of your life. But I did notice myself having a lot of anxiety throughout the relationship of, you know, just the constant arguing or, you know, her being a very argumentative person or like filled with drama, and my stress levels rising. So, yes. You know, it's difficult to say.
Have you seen the movie Casino with Robert De Niro?
Yes.
Ginger from Casino is the epitome of the girl we're talking about, I think.
Yep, I remember.
And she does a number on Robert De Niro's character. You can see how that turned out for him.
Right. That's the thing. It could turn out very badly.
Yeah.
It could be like great fun, but it could also fuck up your life. Whereas some of these other girls, you know, hey, this girl's probably not going to fuck up my life. This girl is probably going to she's not a train wreck. She, you know, is responsible. And here's what I realized. This like was a major factor. I mean, I pride myself on being a responsible guy. And if your partner is irresponsible, then everything you do in your life to be responsible kind of goes out the window. Because when you're in a relationship with someone and a marriage and a family with someone down the road, it does come down to the lowest common denominator. So if your partner is irresponsible, then you get the shitstorm of that irresponsibility despite you making all the perfect decisions. So
very good point.
What does that do to your psychology? Then that means that like everything you do, you can make like do everything right and still get like the fucked up result. And it's kind of like that that psychology experiment with the dogs where I think I don't think it was the Pavlov one, or maybe it was where, you know, at first they hit one button, they get a treat, they hit one button, they get a shock, and then it starts to randomize. And then the dogs like end up in a corner all depressed and just like don't know what to do and just like go crazy. Like, I don't want to be that dog in the corner.
Fuck.
You know?
Yep.
I don't want to be the guy who like does all the right things, but like, you know, gets the shit end of the results as a result of my partner. That's the issue when you deal with you know, the train wreck of a situation.
Totally. Yeah, and I've seen it happen to so many guys. You know, they go through the horrible divorce and, you know, custody and crazy stuff. I'm happy I've managed to avoid that trap up until now.
Mm-hmm. actually, you know, I was having a conversation with that same ex recently, but she gives a very good piece of advice from the other end of the table, which is, you know, because I met her on SA and she has gone on dates with a lot of like sugar daddies per se and guys who are in their 40s and have been married and have had kids before and now are like so happy just to have a hot girl to have dinner with and to, you know, pay her for that. Then, you know, she gives the perspective of the lonely guy who kind of made the wrong decision in his 30s and was having the same struggle that we're talking about here today of deciding between, hey, like I'm having all this fun and versus, hey, I really feel at this age of mine, I should settle and find a girl to have kids with. And then they choose the girl that they want to have a family with just because they want to have a family as opposed to really finding a good partner for them. And then they end up miserable in a miserable marriage and a miserable family situation, end up divorced and end up on seeking arrangements using it the way it's supposed to be used.
Right. Fuck.
So you don't want to be in that situation either. So what I've realized about relationships is it really comes down to trust. And I say trust not just from a loyalty standpoint, but from a trust that you're going to trust that you're going to be attracted to your partner for the rest of your life. You're going to trust that your partner is going to excite you for the rest of your life. You're going to trust that if shit hits the fan with your business, that you could count on your partner to be there and to support you. You're going to trust that your partner will be a great mother to your child. You're going to trust that you will have a good life with your partner. It comes down to trust on in every aspect. And, you know, with these fun girls, they tick off the box of, hey, I know that I'm always going to have so much attraction for my partner. I know that I'm always going to enjoy fucking her. I know that I'm always going to be, you know, never bored with her. But then when it comes to the other aspects, that's where you start to say, oh, I don't know if I could trust her with that.
Right. Yeah, that's 100% what I believe and what I've experienced. And when you don't feel like you can trust your partner, it has such a damaging, you know, just the psychological aspect of just all those bad days, all those fights. It really takes a toll. Mm-hmm. And it's been really interesting for me just being single for now a year. And I've had certainly some, you know, girlfriend experiences that were very close to being like an actual girlfriend, right? But I've just based on this crazy lifestyle I've built, it just lends itself to to not, you know, having just, you know, if there's another party around the corner, how the hell am I supposed to be in a relationship? And I've tried actually bringing two kind of girlfriends to the parties, and that's turned out pretty ridiculous, as you can imagine. But it's been a cool year for me because it's allowed me to really take a lot of a big inventory of kind of my own issues. You know, I've shared the bed many nights, but I've also had a lot of time where I don't have someone to kind of rely on, you know, for that emotional support.
Exactly. And then it's like you want to consistently fill that void with the strange, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so, but then, you know, you will definitely have those nights where you don't have someone, and those could be the nights where you need someone the most.
And, you know, and I found the nights where I'm actually, where I sleep alone have been some of my best nights.
Well, definitely after being in a relationship for a couple of years and then having the bed to yourself and having that alone time is definitely a breath of fresh air.
For sure.
There are other times when, you know, you want, like you said, you want someone you can rely on. You want someone like who's a consistent in your life.
Yes.
Like the stable situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but partner, I guess, as they say.
Right. Exactly.
Versus a chore or a
so yeah, exactly. So you tell me that. So tell me more about this. You brought two girlfriends to a party and it was interesting in a good way or bad way?
Well, I guess it would be more more truthful. It was one. So the first party we did in the Maldives, one of the girls from the trip, like she kind of became like what was almost a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I brought her to the following trip in February, which was Vitaly's birthday party in Cyprus. And, you know, what was a great situation in the Maldives where, you know, we were having tons of fun and sex and, you know, her friends were videotaping us having sex and joining us having sex. And that was all the craziness, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't have that same experience, which I was hoping for in Cyprus. It was more jealousy and fighting and bullshit like that, right? Mm-hmm. And her being territorial. So that didn't work out. And then the next Maldives trip, which was 2 months later, I was back in the U.S. for about a month and a half, cruising around the Southwest in an RV, doing van life, basically, with a group of friends. And one of the girls, a friend of a friend, brought her out, and we hit it off. And I had the Maldives trip coming up in like 2 weeks, but, you know, within that span before the trip, we had basically gotten into a relationship. We were together 24/7 and having a ton of fun and just clicking on so many levels. She's American, so we had a much deeper connection very quickly versus the Ukrainian girl from the first trip. So I brought mm-hmm. her to the Maldives.
Ooh.
And the first 4 days, I was basically fucking everyone else and ignoring her. And then, but that was okay because she was fucking girls and being a really good sport about it. Cause I told her, I'm like, listen, mm-hmm. this is a trip where we're going to fuck, right? Mm-hmm. You can fuck with me. You can fuck without me. and everything's okay. Just don't be upset. Expect the worst. Expect the most fuckboy version you could possibly imagine of any single person on the earth. That's what you're going to get from me, right? So
Prepter.
I it definitely helped him to set the expectations. But then I found, like, after the first 4 days, I was like, wow, like, fuck, I just really want her. And we had the most amazing 3 days, the last 3 days of the trip. Mostly just had sex together, had, you know, one other girl that we fucked, but it, like, the connection was with her was amazing. And I, after going through 3 months of the Dan Bilzerian lifestyle, I was like, wow, maybe this could be the girl that, you know, could be great. She had all the things we mentioned about, you know, fun, cool, hot, center of attention, but she also had a motherly side to her, and she seemed mature, and she, you know, I was like, wow, maybe this could be the girl. And then we got back to LA, we flew home, and the next day she disappeared. Just poof, gone. Didn't hear from her for like 3 days. And I'm like, wow, that is just about as big as of a red flag as I could possibly ever get. So I'm going to walk away now, which was a very good decision. Because there's, like, once that happens, right? Once someone that you think is just potentially going to be like the mother of your children, and, you know, all of these fantasies and all these, you know, whatever the fuck's going through your mind can just disappear. I mean, what are they capable of doing later?
Right.
You know, and it was just Ginger from Casino to a T, just gone. No texting, no nothing. And this was like, you know, us literally telling each other we love each other, staring into each other's eyes on like a 18-hour flight back from LA to Dubai. Wow. 16 hours, right? Just like it couldn't have been more fairy tale, intense, just amazing, right? And then just get back to LA, gone. And I'm sure she was probably fucking sugar daddy or doing something or trying to figure out some situation. Who knows? She's kind of a hustler, but.
Well, here's what I realized. Women are just so emotional, and, you know, they make decisions based on emotions. So if their emotional state is a certain way, and usually it's from like them talking to their girlfriends, which is such a dangerous territory because, you know, their girlfriends don't know the situation, or even their guy friends, they don't know the situation. They're just hearing it from a third perspective. Then, you know, that time apart from one another is potentially a very dangerous time because they could be totally influenced from other perspectives that, you know, truly don't understand the situation. And, you know, then kind of be in an emotional state where, as like men, I think we're more logical in a way that if we say, hey, this woman is good for us, then that's like a logical decision that's not really going to waver unless like some new information comes that is going to make us change our mind. But it's not, if we get an emotional state where we're feeling bad about a situation, then, you know, our logic kind of comes in and says, okay, well, that's like a temporary feeling, but I've already kind of made the decision that this woman's good for me. So, you know, that just passes. Whereas if you don't fix a woman's emotional state, then you're just going to lose it. Yeah. And that's scary.
Especially,
so when you get women who are overly emotional, then that's like a scary state, because if their decision model is based on emotions, emotions are so unstable that how are you supposed to have like a stable long-term relationship? And that's kind of an issue I dealt with in like, you know, the past relationship I had, which was with a very, very emotionally driven girl.
And typically those girls are the hottest and the most fun.
Right. So what the fuck are we to do, Robbie?
You know, I think it's tough, but you know, I think age has a lot to do with it, right? When a woman is in her early 20s, you know, 22 to 26, when she's, you know, at the peak of her attraction level, and at the peak of access to anything she wants in the world. Like, a hot woman has more access than like basically anyone. You have like the access of the president. You can go anywhere you want, do anything you want, get anything you want for free. No, right. Everyone sucks your dick. And then that starts to go away. And, you know,
pussy power dissipates.
Yes.
Once you get locked up.
So, you know, I think you have to maybe ideally, right? There, you can meet a girl who's maybe had that experience and who's looking for something more long term, and who understands that maybe making radical emotional decisions hasn't fared too well for her over the past few years, right? But if she's hot, you can pretty much guarantee that she's had that experience, right? Unless she's really had her like nose to the grindstone and, you know, been like college and then immediately after college or university, like into a job that's kept her out of like the single dating
the scene.
Exactly. Right.
The scene. Or if you get them young enough that they just don't have that experience yet.
Right. Which could also be a problem too, because they might want to have it later.
Yes.
Which I've seen really destroy what could have been good relationships with, you know, guys who married like their college sweetheart, cool, hot, awesome girl, and then she starts, you know, at the age of like 32 when her sex drive goes into crazy, she starts cheating and wanting to go out and go to the clubs and have orgies because she never did that.
But hey, you know, I mean, in all fairness, I mean, can you imagine if you know, us as men settled when we were like, you know, first having our first relationships at like, what, 18, 19, whatever. You know, I mean, I'm thinking back to like the girls I dated then. It's like, well, geez, if I didn't know any better, you know, I thought, wow, this is an amazing girl. But, you know, those were our first experiences. And, you know, imagine if we kind of settled for that and just I guess we'd be living life of ignorance.
Totally.
And, you know, we wouldn't know what we don't know. We wouldn't know what we're missing.
Exactly. Which, you know, could be a good
once
thing.
Once you've tasted the sweet nectar, then it's like there's no going back. You've tasted that sweet nectar and you know what's good in life.
Yes. Yeah, I think the key, what I look for is I want to find someone who's like a counterpart, right? I don't judge a girl or give a fuck. In fact, I'd almost hope she's had a lot of crazy, insane sexual experiences, been a total slut like I am. Right. Because I feel like we could connect on that level. Right. And if she's if she's in a place where she wants something more of substance, if she can manage her emotions and understand that, you know, in my opinion, the most important thing in a relationship is just honest communication. Right? It doesn't matter if you're pissed off or this or that, or you want to tell someone to go fuck themselves. If you can just, you know, honestly communicate like an adult. And I've been studying nonviolent communication, which has been really, really eye-opening. I don't know if you've heard about that before. But just if you want to check it out, just go to YouTube and Google nonviolent communication. And it's once I started looking at that, I'm like, wow, this is a way where you can deal with a ton of potential problems in a very mature, loving way. And I know if I would have had those tools, some of the situations would have been much better mitigated with the, you know, those three crazy party girls in a row. Part of me thinks, oh, maybe had I had the tools to communicate with her better, things would have been different. But I think they're all kind of too young and just not in a place where they wanted what I wanted. Right. So that's, I guess, I don't know if that answers the question, but I guess that's what I'm kind of looking for, is looking for someone who's had a crazy life. They kind of want something else.
I think that's the best, because then at least like they understand it, and you know, you could connect on your hoary days together.
Totally.
And the fact that you've chosen each other out of you know, so much selection and abundance. And you know, that was kind of the situation with my ex, where, you know, we both had been with a lot of people and a lot of crazy experiences, and you know, you kind of choose each other because you stand out from the crowd with each other. I think that women who also do not pass judgment, but maybe have not had those crazy experiences themselves, you know, they could also be fitting for guys like us who have had a colorful history. You know, but the ones who are, you know, more judgmental would be shocked if they truly knew the truth. Like, how much could you really connect with those women, because it's like you could never be truly honest with the stories, or never could really share like the journey that we've gone on.
You did what in men. Kiev for 6 months?
Right. Well, I found, you know, I did ask that question with you know, how'd it go with you inviting the two girlfriends to the party, because that's it's just a really interesting dynamic. And if you're kind of dating girls not seriously, it's one thing. If you have, like, let's say you're in a relationship and you try to, you know, get into situations where you're bringing multiple women in, then it from experience gets very tricky. But if you're just having fun, and if, let's say, it's a girl you've been dating but you're not exclusive, and you combine her with a girl who you've also been seeing, and you do it in a shameless way, then I've had some pretty fun situations like that, where I've just, like, one day I was partying and I just decided, hey, you know what, I'm going to just invite, like, every single girl in my Rolodex. I'm going to just, every girl I've been fucking, and there was a lot, yep. I'm just going to invite them all to the party. And, you know, maybe like 20% came through, and it ended up being a fun time.
Oh yeah. Just get some popcorn and see what happens.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you're in a situation of abundance where you don't really care to lose any of the girls, then, that's, like, quite the position of power, because then you could be truly bold in your actions. And say, hey, I made it kind of vague. I was like, hey, I have a fun group together. You should come. We're at the beach right now, or this and that. And it's just like, they come and they're like, oh, they kind of get the situation. And, you know, I think those are that's like some of the highlights of that lifestyle, is when it's not so much about, you know, the sex per se, as opposed to the ridiculousness of the situation. And it's like, kind of like, how far can you take it?
Right.
And, you know, how crazy of a situation can you create?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Just like, well, let's see what happens here. Well, this should be interesting.
Right.
Yeah. It's cool to chat about this with other guys like you who have had the same experience that I have, you know, cause there's not that many guys out there that have done the crazy shit we've done, you know? And I'm sure there's other guys thinking, like, whoa, if only I could do that cool, crazy shit and bang a bunch of Playboy models on a yacht. But then it's like, well, look, you still have problems. you still have
problems. And, you know, then, you know, it doesn't last forever unless you kind of, like, keep filling that, or keep feeding that beast. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a cost to it, because I will say, when I had my period of, focusing on that, my business did suffer, because, I wasn't paying attention to it. So, yeah. You know, it's sacrificing one for another. My mentor, you know, he would tell me, Calvin, there's no such thing as balance. You kind of sacrifice one area of your life when you're focusing on another, and you just have to decide what's important to you at any one time. I mean, you could want to have it all. I think you just need to focus on an area until it's taken care of, and then, you know, move on to the next.
Yeah, I totally agree. At any time in my life where I've had stretches of, like, a ton of big success or wins, it's been 100% focus on that. Just the easiest example is, I lost like 60 pounds in 2011, and I literally did nothing except go to the gym, work out, go to the gym, work out, cook, eat healthy. My business went to basically zero. My girlfriend and I broke up.
Right.
But got that six pack almost, you know?
Yep, almost. a four pack.
Yeah, it was a four pack. I can right. Didn't get the six pack, we got the four pack, but I wasn't no longer had the keg, which was very very nice.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. I think that's a good place to leave off. I feel like we could go on forever, and so much more to talk about. So it's been awesome having you on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, awesome, man. Thank you so much for, giving me your time and all of your amazing insights. I think it's been you've given a ton of really solid, applicable advice to people. And I know the listeners will really appreciate that.
Glad to add value.
Cool, man. Well, I will talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.